Welcome to the International Football Podcast. In today's episode, I give a wrap-up of the Nations League, explain how qualification will work for Euro 2020 ahead of the qualifying groups draw in Dublin on December 2nd, and discuss the state of Irish football given the departure of Martin O'Neill. Welcome to another episode of the International Football Podcast. Today it's just me. Tel is not available. And I'm going to look at the European Nations League. So let's have a look at Group 1. The Netherlands have qualified. The Netherlands needed a point in their last game away to Germany, their rivals. And they managed to get it. They were losing 2-0 with 5 minutes to go. And two goals in the last 5 minutes. The one that did it was Van Dijk after he was sent up front. And they got the result they needed. So very surprisingly, we have the rare sight of seeing Germany relegated to League B for the next installment of the Nations League. The Netherlands topped the group, which was very surprising considering their team for a couple of years before this tournament were really underachieving, going through a bit of a transition phase, obviously. You had quite a few new young players coming into the team. Players such as Matthijs de Ligt, who at 19 is Ajax's captain, which I just think is incredible. Centre-back, he's a regular starter for both Ajax and the Netherlands. Looks to be one for the future indeed. In fact, one for the present as well. If we check out Group 2, and going into the final game, it was out of Switzerland and Belgium. Iceland lost every match and will be relegated. Switzerland-Belgium, though, Belgium had won the first leg in Belgium 2-1. Belgium only had to avoid losing by two goals or more, basically, and they would have secured the top spot. They went 2-0 up, and at that stage, it must have looked to everyone watching like Belgium had the top spot and would go to the playoffs. Didn't happen. Switzerland turned it around, ended up destroying Belgium 5-2. An incredible game of football. Haris Seferovic with a hat-trick and really entertaining stuff. Switzerland topped the group and, in fact, finished the highest-ranked team out of any team in Europe with 3 wins out of 4. So they will be seeded first for the Euro 2020 qualifiers. In Group 3, we had Portugal, Italy, and Poland. Portugal won the group, 2 wins and 2 draws. Italy finished 3 points behind, but will remain in League A. Poland were relegated without a victory. Portugal will host the playoff tournament next summer. And in Group 4, we had England, Spain, and Croatia. Really entertaining stuff. Until 5 minutes to go in the last game, all 3 teams could qualify or could top the group and qualify for the playoffs. In the end, Croatia were winning against England 1-0. At that stage, with 12 minutes to go, Croatia were actually in pole position to top the group. Lingard scored an equaliser for England, which at that stage was putting Spain through, who were waiting in the wings, hoping for a draw. And in the end, another extremely dramatic finale to this game. And Harry Kane popped up to steer home in the 85th minute. And it led to England topping the group and England qualifying for the playoffs. So, really exciting stuff. In the end, Haris Seferovic finished top scorer in League A, with Romelu Lukaku a close second on 4 goals, 1 goal behind Seferovic's 5. And as I said, the top 4 teams, Switzerland, Portugal, Netherlands, and England, will play in the playoffs in June to decide the winner of the Nations League. Moving on to Nations League B, first group, you had Ukraine, Czech Republic, and Slovakia. Ukraine topped the group, 3 wins, and will go to the playoffs. Czech Republic finishing in second, Slovakia are relegated. Group 2, we had Sweden top the group with a result against Russia on the last day. They needed to win. They won 2-0. They topped the group. Russia finished second. Turkey are relegated to League C. In Group 3, Bosnia and Herzegovina topped the group with an undefeated record. Very good result for them, really. Austria finished second and will remain in League B. Northern Ireland are relegated with 4 losses out of 4. Perhaps that was a little bit unlucky for Northern Ireland. I watched their game at home to Bosnia, which they were all over Bosnia and should have won it, but ended up with no points. Group 4, and my country's group, Republic of Ireland. Republic of Ireland were relegated with only 2 points out of 4 matches, and even that was, I'd say, lucky. They were absolutely awful all throughout the tournament, and we've just heard the news that Martin O'Neill has parted ways with the Republic of Ireland. Thank God. Hopefully we can get Stephen Kenny in there to start playing some proper football. Denmark topped the group with 2 wins and 2 draws, and Wales finished in second place. Denmark will go to League A. Now, the 4 best teams in League B, according to the overall ranking, that have not qualified for UEFA Euro 2020 through the qualifying group stage, will compete in the playoffs, with the winners qualifying for the final tournament. So basically, we at the moment that you're looking at Bosnia, Ukraine, Denmark and Sweden. Now, if none of those teams qualify through the normal route, they will compete in the playoffs. If some of those teams, or one, at least one of those teams, do qualify through the normal route, their place in that playoff will be taken by the next ranked team. All of the teams in each league are ranked according to their points and then goal difference and then probably down to fair play. Eventually, etc. Notably, the two bottom ranked teams in League B are the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. But even they could end up in the playoffs if all of the other teams qualify through the normal route. Unlikely, but possible. In League C, Group 1, the teams were Scotland, Israel and Albania. Scotland, with a couple of great performances towards the end of their campaign, topped the group. Israel second, Albania will be relegated. In Group 2, we had Finland, who topped the group. Actually lost their last 2 matches, but they had already secured qualification, so they'll be promoted to League B. Hungary and Greece were second and third, respectively, and Estonia will be relegated to League D. In Group 3, Norway topped the group. Just nudging out Bulgaria, 2 points clear of Bulgaria. So Norway will be promoted to League B. Both Cyprus and Slovenia have been relegated to League D as 4 teams come up from League D. In Group 4, Serbia undefeated topped the group and will be promoted. And Romania and Montenegro were second and third respectively. Lithuania lost every match and will be relegated to League D. As I said previously, the lowest ranked third place team was also relegated. Those teams were ranked against each other based on the points they accumulated in their respective matches. Although the matches against the top 3 teams were counted. It was Greece, Albania, Montenegro and Cyprus. Cyprus had the worst records. They were relegated. The top scorers, Aleksandar Mitrovic finished as top scorer in Nations League C, with James Forrest just 1 goal behind. The top scorers in Nations League B, it was a tie between Edin Dzeko of Bosnia and Herzegovina and Patrick Schick of Czech Republic with 3 goals apiece. Nations League D, in Group 1, Georgia will be promoted, finishing top of their group with 16 points. Kazakhstan and Latvia were quite a way behind them. Andorra finished bottom of the group, although they only lost 2 matches out of 6, so they managed to draw 4 times. They finished on the same points as Latvia, but had a worse goal difference, so Andorra bottom out the group. Group 2, Belarus, finished top with 4 wins and 2 draws. They didn't concede a goal in any of their 6 matches. They will be promoted to League C. Luxembourg were second with 10 points and Moldova were third with 9 points. San Marino didn't score a goal, did not get a point and had a minus 16 goal difference. So despite this format pitting them against teams of what is supposed to be similar level, it really just goes to show how far San Marino are behind other teams. In Group 3, Kosovo, a relative newcomer to international football, have been playing great stuff. They've been promoted. Both Kosovo and Azerbaijan had the potential to win the group on the last day, and Kosovo were at home to Azerbaijan. Kosovo won 4-0, so that is a great result for them, and they'll be promoted to League C. Azerbaijan were 5 points behind. Faroe Islands finished 4 points behind them with 5 points. Malta managed to get three draws, but only 3 points and bottom out the group. In group four, the winners were Macedonia, who finished on 15 points, and they did quite well to beat Armenia. They finished 5 points clear of Armenia, who have a couple of big name players in the likes of Mkhitaryan. But probably an even bigger surprise was to see Gibraltar pick up two wins in this group. They finished third with 6 points. Liechtenstein bottom out the group with only 4 points. Taking a look at the top scorers for League D, Yura Movsisian, an Armenian player who actually grew up in the United States, was the equal top scorer with Stanislav Drahun of Belarus, both finishing on 5 goals, so congratulations to them. So the draw for the European Championships 2020 will be held at the Convention Centre in Dublin on the 2nd of December. And there's a lot of confusion as to how qualification will work. We've recently seen the Nations League groups come to a close. Most people know that the Nations League is now tied to the qualification process, Euro 2020. So how does it work? So I'm going to attempt to explain how it all works. So first of all, the teams will be seeded based on the UEFA Nations League overall ranking. That means all 55 teams have been already given a ranking based on where they finished in the Nations League. For example, in League A, the four teams that topped the groups, they will be seeded in the top four. Now, there are going to be 10 groups, so those four teams will definitely be seeded first, as will the six next best ranked teams in League A. Now, there are 55 teams and only 10 groups, so that means there will be 5 groups of 5 teams and 5 groups of 6 teams. So this means that some teams will have to play more matches, and this works out perfectly because it turns out the top four teams, the teams that topped their groups in League A, which are England, Switzerland, Portugal, and the Netherlands, will be placed in one of those 5 groups. That will make sure that they don't play as many games as the other teams, which will leave a couple of match days free for them to compete in the Nations League finals, which will be in June 2019. So those 4 teams will be placed in a separate pot to the other first seeded teams. They will be drawn in groups A to D, which will mean they'll only have to play 8 qualifying matches. As most people know, this will be the first ever European Championships, which is not going to be hosted in only 1 or 2 countries. It will actually be hosted in multiple countries across Europe. Because of this, UEFA are also making it possible for all of the host associations to qualify and have home games, the home games that are allocated to their countries. For example, those countries are Azerbaijan, Denmark, England, Germany, Hungary, Italy, the Netherlands, Republic of Ireland, Romania, Russia, Scotland, and Spain. So all of these teams will be hosting games. Because of this, a maximum of 2 of those teams will be placed in the same group. That way, it'll make it possible for all of them to qualify. Although, to be honest, I'm not particularly optimistic about Ireland's chances of qualifying. UEFA has also engineered it so that teams with sensitive political relations will not be drawn in the same groups. So Armenia and Azerbaijan will not be drawn in the same groups, nor will Gibraltar and Spain, Kosovo and Bosnia and Herzegovina, Kosovo and Serbia, nor Ukraine and Russia. There will also be a maximum of 2 teams identified as venues with high or medium risk of severe winter conditions placed in the same group. I think that's interesting. I don't believe UEFA have done this before. So that will relate to Belarus, Estonia, Faroe Islands, Finland, Iceland, Latvia, Lithuania, Norway, Russia, and Ukraine in order to reduce teams' risk of exposure to too much or too many winter matches. Only 2 of those teams will be allowed in the same group together. There's also a rule to prevent any individual team from having too much excessive travel. So there'll be a maximum of 1 pair of teams identified with excessive travel distance in relation to other countries. This means that Azerbaijan can only be with 1 of Gibraltar, Iceland, and Portugal. Iceland with only 1 of Armenia, Cyprus, Georgia, and Israel. Kazakhstan, with only one of, Andorra, England, France, Faroe Islands, Gibraltar, Iceland, Malta, Northern Ireland, Portugal, Republic of Ireland, Scotland, Spain, and Wales. That is an awful lot for Kazakhstan, which has been basically in Central Asia. I think that really limits the actual number of teams they can be placed with. Now, as for the seedings, so as I said before, the four winners of the groups in Group A are placed in a separate pot. That's called the UNL pot. That'll be Switzerland, Portugal, Netherlands, and England. The remaining six teams that are seeded will be Belgium, France, Spain, Italy, Croatia, and Poland. This is very interesting because this means that Germany are not seeded, which is probably the first time ever. Their bad form and bad results group in League A mean that they will be actually in pot two, meaning they will be drawn with one of those teams who are seeded first. Also seeded second will be Iceland, Bosnia, Ukraine, Denmark, Sweden, Russia, Austria, Wales, and Czech Republic. This means that due to the Republic of Ireland's very poor form, they've fallen down to third seed, along with Northern Ireland and Scotland and Slovakia, Turkey, Norway, Serbia, Finland, Bulgaria, and Israel. This is going to make it difficult for Ireland to qualify through the normal route. I'd be hoping to get the likes of Bosnia, who we've beaten before in the playoffs recently, or possibly Iceland, Wales. I mean, they thrashed us last time, but maybe we can get a better result next time if we've got a proper manager. Another item of note is that Finland have managed to be seeded third with their great performance in their group. Greece have dropped down to pot four. Kosovo have made it to pot five and have just missed out on pot four themselves. Latvia, who qualified for a European Championships 10 or so years ago, are actually in pot six, along with Liechtenstein, Andorra, Malta, and San Marino. Gibraltar have been popped up to pot five, so they could actually draw San Marino in their group, which I think would be an interesting matchup. So I'm looking forward to the draw in Dublin on December 2nd to see those groups. Now, as most people know, there is another possible path to the European Championships 2020. So the two group winners of these 10 groups will qualify. That makes 20 teams, but there are 24 teams going to be at the tournament in total. So that makes 10 times 2 is 20. So there will be four remaining places left. And basically those four remaining places will go to the best team from each respective league in the League of Nations who have yet to qualify. So all of the group winners of each group in each league have basically already made it to the final four playoff from each league. And one of those four teams in each league will be the winner, and they will get the final place assigned to that league to qualify for Euro 2020. Now, it's possible, of course, that those teams could have already qualified through the normal process. And if this is the case, their place in those playoffs will be taken by the next best ranked team. Now, these playoffs will take place in March 2020. Of course, this method leaves open the possibility, if a group winner has already qualified through the conventional qualifying group stage, they will be replaced by the next best team in the same league. However, it leaves open the possibility that there are not enough teams in the same league left to take that spot because they've all already qualified through the conventional method. If this happens, then the spot will go to the next best team in the overall ranking. However, group winners cannot face teams from a higher league. So, I mean, it's obviously much more likely that the teams from League A will qualify through the conventional method than the teams from lower leagues. So perhaps we could look at some possibilities in order to picture what might happen in our minds. So if we say there is a qualifying group that contains France as first seed and Germany as second seed, and say as third seed, Finland. Now, just assuming France and Germany top that group and qualify through the conventional method, and Finland come third. Finland, having already won their group in the Nations League, will automatically qualify for the playoffs for teams from League C. Now, it might be that the other three teams who are in who have already qualified for that playoff will also be in that playoff because they lose out to the higher seeded teams in the conventional route. But it might be that another team such as Norway actually qualify through the conventional route. Say, for example, Norway are drawn with Belgium and Russia, but they manage to come second in that group, beating out Russia. So Norway's place in the playoff for League C will actually go to the next best ranked team in that league. Now, the next best ranked team in League C is Bulgaria. Bulgaria didn't win their group, they came second. So in such a situation where Norway finish above a team like Russia, Bulgaria will take Norway's place in that playoff section for League C in March 2020. Now, a little bit about the playoffs. So the playoffs will occur in March 2020. Now, every league will have playoffs of four teams, although it's possible some of those four teams will be made up of teams from lower leagues because teams in that league had already qualified through the conventional route. And it's worth pointing out that yes, even League A will have playoffs in March 2020, in addition to the Nations League finals, which is not going to be related to qualifying, which are held in June 2019. Remember, between Switzerland, England, the Netherlands, and Portugal. In fact, it's likely Path A, which is the playoff section for the teams from League A, it's likely not to include those teams because it's very likely strong teams such as England, Portugal, Switzerland, etc. will qualify through the conventional route, and those positions will be taken up by lower ranked teams from lower leagues who have not qualified through the conventional route and have not been ranked in the top four in their respective leagues. I hope this has provided some clarity to people trying to understand this qualification process. It is really quite complex. I recommend, if you still want additional clarity, to check out the Wikipedia page for UEFA Euro 2020 qualifying. I find Wikipedia the best source for football-related events. There are dedicated editors who update this information in real time. I must say, I think whoever thought up this convoluted qualification process deserves some sort of award, because I think it is really far, far more interesting. The Nations League has been such a revelation. There have been for years people criticizing friendlies, and really they probably deserve to be criticized because so many international friendlies are being played when no one really cares about them. This way it makes it competitive, it keeps it interesting, and you can see from the matches how much more entertaining it's been because the teams actually care about winning. It actually affects their seeding. It affects their ability to qualify for tournaments. It's fantastic. I mean, that final group with England, Croatia and Spain was riveting. The same went for the Belgium and Switzerland group and some of the lower groups as well. I think it's really given a shot to international football, and I'm very pleased about it. I also really enjoyed the extended format of the last tournament when they increased the number from 16 to 24 teams. I found that so much better watching teams like the likes of Iceland, Northern Ireland, Hungary, all doing well as well at the tournament. This particular format, I also think will be really, really good. The way they've spread the host cities throughout Europe, I think that's going to be really interesting. No one team in particular will have a particular home advantage throughout the entire tournament. And you're going to see games in the likes of Dublin, Baku, and Azerbaijan. I think that's fantastic. So well done, UEFA. I also much prefer how UEFA seed these events. FIFA always seed based on the FIFA rankings and the FIFA rankings alone, and I think that system is heavily flawed. The way it's calculated is flawed. It allows teams to go on a good run of form of three or four games to suddenly be in the top three in the world, as we saw with Wales a couple of years ago. It's just really unfortunate that they rank these really important tournaments. They seed these really important tournaments based on these really flawed rankings. Whereas UEFA, they're using the performance of teams in the Nations League to seed teams for the qualifiers for Euro 2020. And the Nations League itself was based on teams' performance in qualifying and at tournaments over the last two or three qualifying tournaments. So I think their system of seeding teams is just far superior. I hope you understand the process a little bit more. My name is Eamon, and this is the International Football Podcast that I run with my brother Tel, who can't be here today. Please follow us on Twitter at @intfootpodcast. We also have a page on Facebook, the International Football Podcast, so please like the page. And please, if you can, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. That will increase our exposure, and add us to your podcast player, whichever it is. I'd just like to talk a little bit about the Republic of Ireland situation. Tel will agree with me when I say that the national team has been playing some horrendous football for a few years now. In particular, after the European Championships in 2016, we started going downhill. We still had a bit of spirit about us, which I think got us into the playoffs for the World Cup. You know, we had a few good results. We beat Austria away 1-0, which extremely rare for us to beat a competitive team away. But we were playing this not particularly pretty style of football, long ball stuff, and we were sort of holding on for dear life, and it was getting a bit worse and worse as time went on. We managed to beat Wales in Cardiff, which got us into the playoff. Then it all came to a head in the second leg of the playoff, where we lost 5-1, utterly thrashed, destroyed by the brilliance of Christian Eriksen. And I think that Martin O'Neill, when he took over, he and Roy Keane kind of gave a little bit of an injection to the side. You know, they weren't revolutionizing the style of football in any way. They were two big names, and they certainly seemed to have an effect on some of the players. And we put in some good performances at that tournament in 2016. We beat Italy, albeit a B team, to qualify for the second round. We were 1-0 up against France, the host nation, at half time. So we were playing well. Duffy got sent off, and we ended up losing 2-1 to two Antoine Griezmann goals. But overall, it was a decent performance for a small country, and a country which hasn't really been producing the talent it did in the 80s, 90s, noughties. In fact, a little bit about that. I was looking back at that generation of footballers, which included Robbie Keane, Damien Duff. They were all my age. So Keane was born in 1980, Damien Duff 79, I'm 79. That particular generation of footballers, we produced some good players for our small nation. And if you look at the results of the youth teams, the Irish youth teams back then, we were consistently performing well. So the Ireland under 18 and 19 team. The tournament is now under 19s. At that time, it was under 18s. And Ireland actually won the European Championships. It was 1997, I think. I can't remember the exact year, but it was in the late 90s. And in fact, in four tournaments in a row, they finished in the top four. So it was a consistent thing for the Irish youth teams around that time. Of course, Brian Kerr was the manager at that time, and he had great results, those players. There were other players. Andy Reid was around, Richie Sadlier, who unfortunately his career was cut short through injury, Richard Dunn. So, you know, we were producing good young players. I'm not so sure that's the case now. We've been more and more heavily reliant on players who are English. They have Irish nationality because of a parent or a grandparent. You know, that's great if those players can play for us, but we haven't been producing so many of the players in Ireland. And I think that really is a reflection of the Irish football setup. The Irish League is one of the poorest leagues in Europe. There's no real reason why that should be. I think a lot of excuses are made, but I mean, if you look at a team like Iceland, who has a far lower population, I mean, the Icelandic league isn't setting the world off on fire, but it's about the same as the Irish League, despite the much bigger Irish population. But Iceland actually is producing these players consistently, and they're homegrown players. Of course, football is not popular. I mean, it is popular in Ireland. It is not the number one sport everywhere in Ireland. Gaelic probably is. I mean, when I look at what's happened in Australia with the A-League and the professional league here, I think they've done a great job of providing an entertaining league, producing young players, putting money into grassroots football so much, so much better than what the FAI have done in Ireland. And I think it's an absolute shame. It's actually really embarrassing for Ireland. I can't stand it when I speak to Irish people who live in Ireland and they only follow the Premier League. You know, support your local league. That's one thing that needs to happen. You know, I mean, the crowds in Irish domestic league games are so low, it is ridiculous. The average crowd would be, I think the average crowd is 1,800. That is just astonishing. I mean, in the A-League, it would be higher than 10,000, with Melbourne Victory getting over 20,000, two or three clubs get that regularly. So Irish football, Cork City get 5,000. There's a bit of support there, it seems. But I mean, Dublin is the biggest city by far, and none of the Dublin teams are doing anything. In fact, all of the Dublin teams have really dropped off over the last 10 years. None of them are doing well, neither in Europe or in the domestic league. Their attendances are just shockingly low, but every single week, thousands upon thousands of Dubliners go across to watch Manchester United and Liverpool play. This is part of the problem. You know, in terms of solutions, I don't know what should be done. Maybe they could set up some sort of link where local fans are somehow linked to a local club, but really something needs to be done about domestic Irish football in order to improve grassroots football, improve the production of good players. The other thing I'd like to say about this is that Ireland does produce some good players. They all end up going to England. The vast majority of them go to England at a young age. You know, sometimes players like James McLean, Shane Long have come through the Irish setup and gone on to England later in their 20s, but they always go to England. And England has, until recently, not been a great place for talented players, players with a bit of technique, like Wes Houlihan, to go and do well. You know, those types of players would be much better suited to going to a continental place, going to the likes of Germany or Spain. That is until recently, because English youth teams started to do well a couple of years ago. And now that seems to be contributing and transferring into the senior team setup. We've seen Gareth Southgate do a really good job at bringing youth in and playing a good style of football as well, not relying on a direct game. And we're seeing guys who are good at the ball at their feet, guys like John Stones, and young players the likes of Ademola Lookman and Jadon Sancho do well in the youth teams now, coming into the senior setup, and the style is suited to them. We're also seeing in the Premier League passing teams doing well. So we've got Guardiola there playing his possession-based football. They're doing really well. We've also got young manager in the likes of Eddie Howe doing really well at Bournemouth, and with technical players, players like Fraser, the Scottish player, and Brooks, who's English, coming in, and they're young, and they're getting their game, and they're doing really well. Sorry, Brooks is not English, he's Welsh, but still, these types of players are now getting their game in the Premier League. And this kind of football is what's successful at the moment, and that's why it was so annoying to see Martin O'Neill playing this horse and cart football, like something from the 19th century. It was just horrible to watch. In the game against Denmark, I watched that game. The game finished nil all in Denmark, but that did not tell the story. I mean, Ireland had 11 men in their box, their own half, the entire match. And this was a dead rubber. What on earth was he doing? Ireland had already finished bottom of the group. Why are you playing like this? Like, start playing some of your technical players. I mean, he was playing guys out of position and everything, but there are some good young players in the Irish setup. who are doing well in the championship, etc. But these guys are not getting a chance. You know, a lot of these young players have been brought into this, into the most recent setup. They're like 24 and 25 now. They've been playing, getting their game. Guys like John Egan, getting their game in the championship for years, but have never had a look in because he doesn't want to risk playing young players. Anyway, rant over. I'm just glad that O'Neill and Keane are gone. And I would love to see Stephen Kenny given a chance. Stephen Kenny, the coach of Dundalk, has been there a few years. Dundalk had an amazing run in the Europa League three or so years ago, where they actually got to the group stage, just missed out on the group stage of the Champions League, which for basically an amateur team was an incredible result. They're fully professional now. They got to the Europa League and they, by the skin of their teeth, they didn't get through to the next stage, but they won a couple of games, drew a couple of games, and they were competing with guys who, you know, one player on the other team would have been getting wages than the entire Dundalk team, no matter who it was in the group. They've consistently got good results in the Irish League in the last few years, so they've just won the league again, and all of his players have been taken away, you know, gone to clubs, particularly to Preston North End, who seem to have about 10 Irish players, but yeah, they've been signed by English clubs, and yet he's still bringing newer players in and doing really well. So he obviously knows what he's doing. He's not a horrible counter-attacking manager. He also knows how to play football. So when Dundalk were getting those results in the Europa League against much, you know, better on paper opposition, they were not playing long ball. They were not playing counter-attack. They were taking the game to these teams and winning. He actually reminds me a lot of Brian Kerr, who I think was a brilliant manager for Ireland. Took over after Mick McCarthy back in 2004. Ireland, his actual win ratio is the best of any Irish manager ever, including Jack Charlton. He never qualified for a tournament, but you're talking about he had one chance, basically. He took over from Mick McCarthy when Ireland had already lost two games to Russia and Switzerland, respectively. Of course, they didn't qualify in that group, but then he had one qualifying group where he also didn't qualify. He finished third behind Switzerland and France. But the key thing about this was that this was a France team that Zinedine Zidane had retired. He came back from retirement in the away match against Ireland in Dublin. And he set up the goal for Henry. France beat Ireland 1-0. And because of that, Ireland didn't make the playoffs. I would have liked to have seen him given another go because for numerous reasons, Ireland were very unlucky not to qualify in that group. He was a rarity in that Ireland played good football under him. It wasn't direct. It was Ireland actually tried to attack teams. It was a strange sight to see indeed, especially when you compare it to Martin O'Neill or Trapattoni. I mean, you're never going to win a game or qualify for a tournament. You know, do well in a tournament playing 11 men in your own half against teams like Denmark, who are not even that good. They're about the same as Ireland on paper. Really, you have to try to do something. A bit like Michael O'Neill has done at Northern Ireland, where they actually go at teams. Sure, it's direct, but they actually try and score goals. And Northern Ireland are much worse than Ireland on paper. Anyway, rant over. Mark 2.